Today, we're going to talk about violence.
The consensus mechanism for fiat currencies is world wars. Whoever wins the first world war gets to price oil in whatever currency they want, and then they can print it. If you are a leader of a country and you're at war, and you can pay your tank factory workers and soldiers and stuff with paper instead of something real, you can afford warfare. All the atrocities of World War I and World War II could have been maybe not entirely avoided, but they could have been much less bad if people hadn't fallen for the fiat scam. Consensual interactions are civilized. Non-consensual ones are violent. Always. If you're using fiat and if you're indebted, you are, by definition, a slave. Like, if you tax 30%, then you're 30% a slave. 100% a slave if you can't keep any of the fruits of your labor. The deeper you dig into this stuff, the more depressing it becomes. Mm-hmm. But then you realize, like, how powerful the free market is and how bright of a future they can have if they just figure out Bitcoin. What we can do is make it less profitable.
The incentive for violence is like, good luck. How do you know how much Bitcoin I have? How do you know where it is?
And
I
you mean, can't.
You can't. I mean, no, it's literally impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down a rabbit hole. Down. Cypherpunk.
Welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunk. I'm joined by my friend Knut Svanholm today, and this is episode 8 of our series on his book, Everything Divided by 21 Million. Today, we're going to talk about violence. What can you tell me about violence?
It's violent. The first thing I'd say is consensual interactions are civilized, and non-consensual ones are violent. Always. So if you're doing something with another person voluntarily and consensual, then it's not violence. Words are not violent. People seem to confuse these things.
That's a shocking statement.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to think that you're violent if you say something on X or offensive. It's
And you're not. However, if you're forced to say something or forced to pay something, then you are a victim of a violent threat. Start off by making that distinction between civilized and barbaric or violent interactions.
It seems that every modern war has been funded by money printing. Can you draw some conclusions about how money printing and the current fiat system incentivizes violence in a lot of ways?
I mean, the whole money printing started just before World War I in Europe. I believe it was the Bank of England that was first to start to print more money than they had gold in their vaults or than the banks had. If you are a leader of a country and you're at war and you can pay your tank factory workers and soldiers and stuff with paper instead of something real, then you can be at war for much longer. You can afford warfare much longer. And money printing is a part of every war, especially during the 20th century. All the atrocities of World War I and World War II could have been maybe not entirely avoided, but they could have been much less bad if people hadn't fallen for the fiat scam.
It seems that the ability to print so much money has just incentivized such massive violence that humanity has never seen this at this scale for this long. I think Ron Paul had that famous quote, which is it's no coincidence that the century of central banking has also been the century of massive total war or something along those lines.
Yeah, I have a slightly different take, and despite all the atrocities of different governments during the 20th century, it's still on the whole more peaceful than if you go back in history. If you go back to caveman era or even the Middle Ages, a large part of the male population died from hits to the head. Uh-huh. Like, it was much more common way to die to be killed by someone.
Mm-hmm.
The further back in history you go, the more common that becomes. So despite all the money printing, the free market forces, or in other words, consensual interactions, have made everything so much better in the world.
Yeah.
that it's violence. The media always pushes. They are selling fear all the time, and they're saying that everything is worse. When everything is really getting better everywhere, mm-hmm. if you look at the statistics. So a good way of thinking about it is to have these two forces in opposite directions, and one is consensual interactions and free markets and mm-hmm. sound money, and the other one is money printing and government and violence and crap. it's like that meme with the road, also, which way, Western man, you know? What do you want for the future? Do you want peace, love, and understanding, or perpetual war? And it all depends on what type of money you choose.
Have you read Alex Gladstein's piece? I think it's like Bitcoin, a Trojan Horse for Freedom.
I think I have, yeah. I read a couple of his pieces, and I think I read that one. It's kind of hard to remember what I did and didn't read at this point. But he's got some good takes. Slavery is still going on, in like colonial slavery, I should say. I mean, if you're using fiat and if you're indebted, you are by definition a slave. And we talked about this the other day, I believe, with you're 100% a slave if you can't keep any of the fruits of your labor, and you're 0% mm-hmm. a slave if you get to keep all of them. And if you're taxed, you're that much a slave. Like, if you're taxed 30%, then you're 30% a slave. And then you add all the other crap to that, like inflationary mm-hmm. money and taxes on other stuff. And you can figure out a rough estimate of how much of a slave you are. And that's not even counting the exponential growth that could have happened that doesn't yeah. happen because of taxes and inflation. But yeah, I think it's worse. The worst part is in Africa is like the old French colonies that are under have currencies that are issued and governed by the central bank in France. They can at will devalue
it. Yeah. I've seen a couple of crazy things like that.
Yeah, and they need to get out of that stuff, because that's mm-hmm. monetary colonialism, and it's super bad. And what it effectively means is that just like the U.S. can use greenbacks to pieces of paper to buy shit from everyone else in the world, that France can do the same to these old colonies in Africa, and mm-hmm. this still goes on. And you have countries in Africa with like negative GDP, so they get more and more indebted and poorer, and it didn't have to be this way. It would be better for everyone if these countries were allowed to enrich themselves from the resources that are in their countries, if they got paid for what they do. Of course it would have. And the deeper you dig into this stuff, the more depressing it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize like how powerful the free market is, and how bright of a future they can have if mm-hmm. they just figure out Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think Germany even had like 9 different currencies in 100 years.
I think it's 10.
Was it 10?
But yeah, it's if you count the Weimar Republic, mm-hmm. and they had different currencies in different regions for a while.
Uh-huh.
So they lived through a lot of hyper, and if you count East Germany into the equation too,
mm-hmm.
They had a lot of different currencies in between the wars and even after. And now they have the Euro. They used to have the Deutschmark. So they've seen it a couple of times, and for that reason, cash is still quite popular in Germany in comparison to other European countries.
What's the connection between monetary chaos and violence?
As I said, governments can print money to wage war, and they can print money to become more powerful. And when they're more powerful, they can threaten people more and do more bad shit. It's just like governments grow like cancers, like cancer tumors. Once an institution is in place, it tends to
metastasize
and fight for its own survival, which usually means spending more money than its intended budget to be able to say that we need more money yet next year, and then the taxes go up and inflation goes up. For instance, the institution that governs snow plowing in the municipality I grew up in, Sweden, they went below budget 1 year because it didn't snow, so they had nothing to plow. And what what they chose to do was to give everyone working there a bonus instead of just giving the money back or lowering the taxes. They gave everyone a bonus.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Good work, lads. No snow on the streets.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy, like what you just described. I've talked to like contractors and stuff, and you know they didn't even realize it when they were talking to me. But like, they would be like in the military or like they'd be in different organizations in the government, and they would tell me like, you know, oh yeah, it's like the end of the period, and if we don't like use this money, it would be like the last day of like the budget period, and they'd be like, well, we've got, you know, $100,000 left on our budget.
Yeah.
So then what they do is they go and if they don't use the money, they'll lose the money or something like that. So go order a bunch of shit off of like, you know, whatever. Just bend the taxpayer over. We ordering, you know, $20,000 coffee machines. This is what they told me. They're like, oh yeah, we had $100,000. We ordered this $20,000 coffee machine for the office. We ordered this, we ordered that. It's like, it's the incentives there is just so fucked up. You know, they didn't even make the connection. That like I'm sitting there listening to this like an absolute like I'm kind of like disgusted by what they're saying.
Yeah.
And they didn't even make the connection that, you know, you're basically stealing from the taxpayer. You know, doing? This is totally
crazy.
There's
no such thing as government funded. It's all taxpayer funded.
Yeah, I guess it's very easy to spend other people's money, I guess, is the question.
It is.
Yeah.
And socialists and socialism fans, people that vote for left-wing parties, or people that vote at all for that matter, they seem to think that, yeah, but they can just take the money from the rich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So not, they don't realize that they're shooting themselves in the foot as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How does Bitcoin play into this equation?
Well, the more of a Bitcoiner you become, the more you adopt Bitcoin, the more you shield yourself from these attacks. If you have sound money, money with a finite supply, it tends to go up in value over time. And I believe that as long as Bitcoin works, it has the potential to go up in value forever, in purchasing power forever. Because even if all the money in the world was in Bitcoin, the economy would still grow. People would still produce goods and services, adding to the overall economy. I mean, the simplest questions, why do people in the public sector pay taxes? And follow-up question, why does anyone pay taxes? And the other one is, if you practice doing something, do you get worse or better at doing that thing? And you get better. So follow-up question is, so why aren't all prices going down forever? And they could be. And they are, if you're using the right denominator. So Bitcoin can absolutely help you get out of the fiat trap, if you're patient and if you can delay your gratification. So we saw yesterday here, we discussed on another show here, the Runway show, right? About there was some important paper from a U.S. government institution of some kind that you can now use.
FHFA.
Yeah,
just saying that they'll actually take that into consideration when evaluating your credit worthiness to get this loan.
Yeah, so you could use paper Bitcoin, which is Bitcoin held by, not by you, but by a custodian. That's a shitcoin, by the way, because not your keys, not your coins. And you could even get your paper shitcoins, like your Ether or whatever other crappy shitcoin, and use that as collateral to get a mortgage to buy a house. And the house itself is in an artificial boom market. Like, real estate is only going up forever because they're printing money forever. Like, a house is really a consumer good for most people. Could be a producer good if you use it as an Airbnb or something. I read somewhere, by the way, that 50% of all real estate that is bought and sold in the USA is intended to be an Airbnb.
50%? Wow. Yeah. That's pretty
massive. More than 50%.
Wow.
So doing this, instead of just acquiring Bitcoin, hodling them for a decade, and buying the house when you can actually afford it, this is another way to get into the fiat debt trap. That this is the source of the problem, that everyone, because the newly printed money is mostly created when people take out a loan. That allows the bank to just print the money, give it to you, and demand it in return with interest. So that's how the money printing happens in the first place. So I would strongly advise that you just acquire real Bitcoin instead keep them secure and don't spend them. That's a much better investment if you can. A lot of my Bitcoiner friends rent instead of owning a house because they don't even view having a house as a good investment anymore. Like, the Bitcoin is obviously a better investment.
No doubt. I mean, Bitcoin is, of course, a better investment.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, you know, do you want to own your property?
Yeah, and I don't want to bash people who want to own their own homes. That's not the point here. And some diversification is probably a good idea. So if you own your house and you own Bitcoin, that's, you don't need much more than that. Like, you should probably buy something tangible at a point, because it's not entirely risk-free to own Bitcoin either. I mean, the biggest risk to your Bitcoins, to your own stack, is probably yourself. Like, if you get amnesia or something and forget your private key.
That is a risk. You just bump a very important risk.
It's a disclaimer here. However, I think this whole... It's been popularized now with to go into debt to buy Bitcoin, and that into fiat debt to buy Bitcoin. And I personally think that sort of defeats the purpose of it, because debt is what the fiat people want you to
kind of
get
seems
into.
Like a, it seems like a attack on the fiat system, though. It's kind of like, you know, that's
if you're Michael Saylor, if you can get a super low interest rate,
0%,
then it's sure is fun to sit on the side with some popcorn and watch this whole thing play out.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't advise regular people to go into debt to buy Bitcoin. That's probably a bad idea.
I think Bitcoin is like, I think, what is the annual APR? It's like 60% or something per year.
It was 200% for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's coming down over time. But I mean, if you can afford to take a fiat loan at 5% and Bitcoin's average return is 60% a year, it just seems like a cheat code.
Yeah.
Get more sats.
Most people think it's going to go down over time, so that the biggest gains was in the beginning. But there's also a chance that
accelerates
accelerates
the S-curve
again.
It is possible
the S curve can turn into a J curve.
Yeah. that is possible.
Yeah,
not a lot of people talk about that. Yeah, it's a good point. Humans have been violent for millennia. Do you think Bitcoin really fully solves that problem, or just mostly solves that problem?
I'd say mostly.
Mostly.
I don't think we can ever eliminate violence completely. What we can do is make it less profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's my thesis is this: like, if I hold a gun to your head and say, mm-hmm. "Matty, give me all your Bitcoins," you can give me whatever amount you want, but I have no way of knowing if that was your entire stack or not.
Yeah,
and that is true for every single person on Earth. Right now, I cannot know how much Bitcoin another person has. I can make an educated guess. I can do chain analytics or some crap like that. But there's no way for me to actually know. You can have more Bitcoins. So from the attacker's perspective, it's probably better to interact voluntarily with the other person and offer something in return.
Yeah.
And that way I can... And just trade, and that way I can acquire more Bitcoin.
If you think about it, that's how the whole network consensus works. I mean, you know, if you can try to attack Bitcoin, but if you have the hash power or ability to attack Bitcoin, you might as well just serve Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
No, and you can put a gun. You can point a gun at 2 + 2, but it's still going to equal 4.
Yeah,
and also if I kill you, no one gets the Bitcoin. But they become more scarce, thereby increasing the power of every other Bitcoiner.
I think what you described, this idea of violent interaction of like trying to take somebody's seize your property violently, stealing essentially.
Yeah,
this was like the aha moment for me that really sucked me down the rabbit hole of, if you study history and you look at, you know, for example, World War II and different wars, you can see that, you know, what did Hitler do in World War II? He went and, what was the first thing he did when he went into these countries? He went to go after their gold reserves.
Yeah,
he went to try to seize it, right? Because he needed to fund and pay for his military campaign. I think Bitcoin... Yeah,
they
really
took the gold from the teeth of dead Jews.
Yeah, it's pretty... They had piles. I mean, you can see pictures, so it's wild, you know, but... they did that too with, I mean, there's some really cool stories of like central bankers like hiding all their country's gold and like fleeing on a train and pretending it's something else. And it's like one dude's got his whole nation's, you know, treasury with him. Kind of wild, fleeing from Hitler. But what I love about Bitcoin is kind of what you described there is like, you know, the incentive for violence is like, yeah, good luck. How do you know? How do you know how much Bitcoin I have? How do you know where it is?
And you can't.
I mean,
no, it's literally impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah. You know? So that's the beautiful part about this idea of violence, this massive disincentive for violence. Like,
and decoy wallets is probably a very good idea.
No, I mean, yeah, it's like I always, you know, people talk about this. There's a lot, if you look, there's a lot of this happening, you know, like this is my argument against fully self-custody, because I don't want to be in a situation where I have full self-custody. So I do have, you know, funds that I have self-custody. I have a hot wallet. Yeah. I've got, you know, Coinbase custodial wallet. I've got, you know, Roth IRA with MicroStrategy in it, right? Like I've got all these different versions of exposure where the risks are different, right? So if somebody comes to me, they're never going to get all of my sats. Like I have a couple thousand that I use in a hot wallet, right? Like if somebody robs me, I'm just going to send, I'm like, look, I got it on my phone. I have access to it. Take a couple $1,000. Yeah. You win. Take it.
Yeah.
You know, but the other funds, like I don't have access to the other funds. So they can't even get it from me.
No. And without revealing too much here, I mean, there's, it's not binary. None of this is. You can do Bitcoin in any way you want, and different Bitcoin is different things to different people, and you can store it in. You don't have to store it in one specific way. You can do many things, and it's very powerful.
Yeah, it really is. You said Bitcoin is so many different things to so many different people. I love that. It's so true, right?
Yeah.
Like I meet people all the time who have come to Bitcoin for completely different reasons, right? Like people that come to Bitcoin because they just, you know, paper Bitcoin never go up. Oh, they can't print it. They like that. It's an investment. Yeah. People trading, gambling, whatever. People that are on the ground in some of these third world countries that actually, holy shit, this is amazing. I need this like to live.
And
like, wow, what a powerful technology.
Yeah. So, and all roads lead to Bitcoin if you're intellectually honest and curious enough. Mm-hmm. I found it quite surprising that so many, devout Christians were fans of Bitcoin when I came into it. Like the second chapter of my first book is called Financial Atheism, because I came to it from a very skeptic's perspective, you know, and I thought for the first time we have a type of money that doesn't require belief in an institution.
Yeah.
So this is like atheist money.
Yeah.
But I realized later on that both Christians and Muslims, Muslims have laws against interest.
Yeah.
You're not
usury. Like, it's called usury.
Yeah, usury. There's this scene in the Bible where Jesus throws out the bankers.
The bankers. Yeah.
I find it so interesting that you can arrive at the same conclusion from such different worldviews and perspectives, and it gives me hope for humanity that that's the case.
No doubt about it. Are there any other rabbit holes when it comes to violence that you want to cover before we close?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this yesterday, but the consensus mechanism for fiat currencies is world wars. Whoever wins the world war gets to price oil in whatever currency they want, and then they can print it.
Bitcoin mining is digital warfare.
No, I wouldn't say that. I don't buy.
I think that's what you said.
Digital warfare. No,
I said it's called it.
No, I
have it here in my notes.
If you have, maybe I wrote that in the book back then, but that's not how I would describe it now. If you look at the evolution of weaponry, first you have fisticuffs, and then you have pointed sticks, and then someone comes up with a shield, and then you can shield yourself from the pointed stick, and then the sword. And then you have a knight in shiny armor, and all of a sudden you have, when you have the knight in shiny armor, you get the mountain from Game of Thrones, so they're able to rape and pillage however much he wants, and no one can do anything about it.
Yeah.
And then guns are invented, and gunpowder, and all of a sudden that's a weak man's weapon, or like an intellectual's weapon, because all of a sudden you don't need muscles anymore to be violent. And Bitcoin is like the ultimate form of armor. It's not a weapon.
Yeah.
It's an armor in the sense that it makes the attack less profitable. Mm. So it's a very, like, if you look at it from a weapons evolutionary perspective, this is like the ultimate form of armor, but never, it cannot be used for attack. Like the only way to get something out of your Bitcoins is to use them. And to trade voluntarily with one another. And it disincentivizes violence in the way I just described, with you cannot know how much another person owns. So
I
think it's all good.
Bitcoin is monetary armor
yeah.
that disincentivizes violence.
Yeah.
I think we'll close out with that.